Testament reading today comes from the book of Genesis, chapter 45, verses 3 through 11 and verse 15. Let us listen for the word of the Lord. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him, so dismayed were they at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come closer to me," and they came closer. He said, "I am your brother, Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourself because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are 5 more years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth, and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his house, and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up into to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me and do not delay. You shall settle in the land of Goshen, and you shall not be near me. You and your children and your children's children, as well as your flocks, your herds, and all that you have, I will provide for you there, since there are 5 more years of famine to come, so that you and your household and all that you have will not come to poverty.' And he kissed all his brothers and wept upon them. And after that, his brothers talked with him." This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Our New Testament reading today is from Luke chapter 6, verses 27 through 38. Let us listen for the word of the Lord. "But to you who are willing to listen, I say, love your enemies. Do good to those who hurt you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who persecute you. If someone slaps you on one cheek, offer the other cheek also. If someone demands your coat, offer your shirt as well. Give to anyone who asks, and when things are taken away from you, don't try and get them back. Do for others as you would like them to do for you. If you love only those who love you, why should you get credit for that? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good only to those who do good to you, why should you get credit? Even sinners do that much. And if you lend money only to those who can repay you, why should you get credit? Even sinners will lend to other sinners for full return. Love your enemies, do good to them, lend to them without expecting to be repaid. Then your reward from heaven will be very great, and you will truly be acting as children of the Most High. For he is kind to those who are unthankful and wicked. You must be compassionate just as your Father is compassionate. Do not judge others and you will not be judged. Do not condemn others or it will all come back against you. Forgive others and you will be forgiven. Give and you will receive. Your gift will return to you in full, pressed down, shaken together to make room for more, running over and poured into your lap. The amount you give will determine the amount you get back." This is the word of the Lord. So I spent some time thinking this past week, remembering when I was a boy, just how much I wanted to be like my dad. Do you guys, men probably particular, remember that? When I remember, about the age of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and especially in that period, looking up at my dad, who could do anything at that point, right? I'm trying to soak that up right now because I realize I'm in that wonderful zone with my kids where they still want to be like me. I remember watching him go running and asking him, like, and I love it because my kids do this to me now, "Dad, can I go running with you?" And he'd be like, "Sure, around the block." And he'd take me around the block and then he'd go out for the rest of his run. And I'd watch him fix stuff in the garage, right? And he'd take out the car and put it up on jacks and get on the creeper and slide underneath it. And I'd get out there and watch him do it, just fascinated at what my dad could do and wanting so much to grow up and be like my father. And as I got older, I remember standing with him. He was a pastor, and I remember standing with him after church. I'd go meet him at the door and stand by his side as he was shaking people's hands and just watch the care and compassion he would show for people and wanting to be like my father. This text we just read is an amazing statement from Jesus. In fact, I think this text we just read today is probably the core of the entire message that Jesus came to preach. If we had one passage on what it means to follow Jesus, it is this one. We'll get into it a little more. But Jesus structures this passage with some astounding language. No one before Jesus taught human beings to think about God as a father. Up to this point, up to the point of Jesus, God was entirely other and separate, and we were humans. And no one referred to God as a parent. In this passage, and I think these words are profound, Jesus says, he calls us, implies that we are God's kids, and says, you should be just as your father. This is some pretty amazing and a wonderful invitation, right? It is saying, because of course, in the culture and the time, kids did grow up to be like their fathers. And we've talked about this before. If your dad was a carpenter, you grew up to be a carpenter. If your dad was a fisherman, you grew up to be a fisherman. If your dad was a farmer, you grew up helping plant seeds. And of course you are going to grow up like your father. This is a powerful invitation and a powerful view of Jesus' trust and hope for us, where Jesus says he wants us to grow up and be like our Father in heaven. These words, though, right? Well, if you weren't here last week, this can only come after last week. The verses that come before this, anybody remember? The Beatitudes, the core statement that you are blessed. You have God's favor. You have God's presence. In fact, Jesus is insisting in these Beatitudes that we have God's favor and presence even when we're poor, that we have God's favor and presence even when we're persecuted, that we have God's favor and presence even when we are mourning and experiencing grief and loss. And until we experience that God is for us and with us, even in these most difficult experiences we go through as human beings, there is no way we're going to be able to step into the kind of life Jesus is inviting us into. Because what Jesus says after that, and he even prefaces it with but for you who are willing to listen, there may, and this is the beautiful graciousness of God, I think, is that there are points in our lives where we are probably not willing to listen. And Jesus will wait for us until we are, and will keep calling us and keep arranging our lives and providing circumstances that may help us get to the point where we will finally be willing to listen to what Jesus invites us into here. And I think this is the most profound and most difficult invitation ever, because we all love the idea of love, right? A warm, fuzzy feeling inside. Aww. You just want to give somebody a hug. Till they ran over your cat. Or till it's the bully on the playground who you saw shove your kid. And then we can save love for later. Right? I mean, if my neighbor's dog pooped on my lawn one more time. No. Jesus says, for those of you who are willing to listen, I say, love your enemies. What? No, that's precisely why we have the categories, right? That an enemy is someone who I do not love, who hates me and who's trying to harm me, and so I'm doing the same back. We love the idea of love when it comes to our families. We love the idea of love when it comes to our friends and our allies and the people who are we perceive to be on our team. But for Jesus to ask us to love the people who aren't, what is this? How could we possibly? That won't work, is the critique, right? Like, if I'm loving to those people, they're just going to take advantage of me and hurt me worse. Maybe that's why Jesus fleshes this out, right? They're going to take advantage of you, like lending money to them and not paying you back. What if they do that? What if they slap you? That excuses you from loving them, right? Clearly. You couldn't love somebody who's slapping. Jesus says, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who hurt you. If someone slaps, and he goes right into this, right? If someone slaps you, that shouldn't stop you from loving them. If someone is taking advantage of you, borrowing money or resources from you and isn't paying you back, that isn't supposed to stop you from loving them. Do for others what you would want them to do for you. I don't think there's anything harder than this. Because when somebody hits me, I want to hit back. When somebody causes harm, there is nothing more visceral and intuitive and quick than, man, somebody needs to put that person in their place, and I'd be happy to help. But Jesus is calling us to something deeper here, and he's calling us, I believe, to seeing every human being as someone who God loves, someone who we, as our Father's children, are called into loving as well, which is going to mean some rewiring of our brains, some changing how we see ourselves in this world and our place in it. If we believe that this is a competition, that life is about coming out ahead and trying to get in front of as many people as possible, then this way of love will not work to achieve that end. But if we see this world and our place in it as an opportunity to build the kingdom of God, to be a blessing to everyone, then maybe there's nobody we have the opportunity to bless more than our enemies. There may be nobody who, when we show, of course you're going to show love to your kids, right? You're kind of biologically wired for that. The people who will be most surprised when you are kind and compassionate to them are the people who are going to least expect it. Not only that, but I think this is one of the places where we have the opportunity to start changing and reshaping the world into a far better place for everyone. When we stop seeing justice as retributive violence, when somebody does something bad to us, if we think it's just to do something bad back to them, which is, of course, this is my kid's argument, right? When I walk into the room and see one of them hit the other. Grant, you don't hit Ryan. What's Grant going to say?
But he hit me.
He hit me first. Oh, that makes it fine. Go right ahead. Of course not, right? No. Somebody else doing something evil and bad does not make it fine to do something evil and bad. And yet, I really don't think we grow too far out of that unless we stop and challenge it. Well, my neighbor did that to me, so I'm just doing it back to them. That's fair. Might be fair, but it's not love, and it actually creates, like, I love the Gandhi quote, an eye for an eye does what? Makes the world blind. Because we all end up causing harm and injury to each other at some point. We're human beings. We are selfish. We're fallible. We see life from our perspective and are often blind to the ways that we can hurt the people around us through our selfishness. And so, of course, we have all, every single one of us, been in a place where we have needed to be forgiven, right? For a relationship can continue, every single marriage, if you do not have to look further, than your marriage to know that you've hurt somebody. And for that marriage to continue, your spouse is going to have to forgive you. Which, of course, means that when your spouse does something wrong to you, it sure would be nice if you forgave them, right? In fact, there's probably no other way to have a healthy marriage than to treat your spouse the way you'd want to be treated if it was reversed, and say that I can recognize that while I tell my boys this all the time and they're still not getting it, like when one of them has an opportunity for power over the other one, they love it, right? Like one of them today is going to have the toy the other one wants and is going to be like, ooh, no, you may not play with my toy. Isn't it awesome? I will play with it myself. Hey, Grant, guess what's going to happen tomorrow? Ryan's going to have a toy you want to play with. Wouldn't it be awesome? In fact, I think if you shared your toy with him today, he would be far more likely to share his toy with you tomorrow, right? Huh. Let's take a longer view of this. In fact, that's what Jesus, I believe, is inviting us into in this passage. Because while he asks us to do some amazingly difficult things, loving our enemies, praying for those who persecute us, not responding with violence and retribution when somebody does something harmful to us, he points out that this will actually give us far more than it costs us, right? He says, your reward will be great. In fact, he goes on and says, love your enemies, do good to them, lend to them without expecting to be repaid, then your reward from heaven will be very great, and you will be truly acting as children of the Most High, for he is kind to those who are unthankful and wicked. I was doing this part down below. Give and you will receive, your gift will return to you in full, pressed down, shaken together to make room for more, running over and poured into your lap. This is abundance, right? That we get far more than we ever sacrifice when we are willing to step into this incredibly difficult calling of loving everyone. He says this is what God is like, which is a pretty wonderful thing too, right? That God is willing to be kind and gentle and generous with people who are ungrateful, people who are wicked, the text says. And that God is willing to be good and kind and for those people. Oh, well, that's actually really good news, because you know what? There's times when I can be really unthankful. Yay, God is good to me. I can be good to my neighbor as well, my really ungrateful, wicked neighbor. They are not outside of God's grace or love either. They get invited in, which means I can be my Father's son and start showing my Father's love to them. I can be an agent of bringing blessing into the lives of people who have brought harm into the world. This is what's the big adventure of this text is that we're not limited to simply favorable circumstances in being able to bring the most beautiful gift of love into this world. That maybe, and perhaps even more than anywhere else, it is when we find ourselves in unfavorable circumstances, when we find ourselves attacked, when we find ourselves taken advantage of, that we are most able to embody Christ to the world around us. This is precisely when we get to love best. I don't think we can ever outgive, outlove, or outforgive our God. Do you? So if our God says, give and it will be given to you, forgive and you will be forgiven, love everyone and you will be loved deeply, do we think we're actually giving anything up? No way. No way. In fact, if any of you have struggled deeply with someone hurting you and having a hard time forgiving them, maybe it's a wound that you have carried for years. But if you've gotten to a point where you were finally able to forgive that person, you inevitably discovered that the person you freed was yourself, right?
Yes.
We think of forgiveness as being something we give to someone else, but when we actually do it, we find out that we are the ones carrying this hurt and pain around. It actually doesn't do much harm to the person we haven't forgiven, right? I mean, I love the quote that lack of forgiveness is like drinking poison and hoping your enemy will die. It will affect your life immensely. It doesn't do a lot to the person who's your enemy. It will make your life toxic You're choosing that one thing, the worst thing that has happened to you, and deciding to make that be what your life revolves around. But when we step into this forgiveness and grace, we find out that we are actually releasing, by releasing that person from needing to cause them harm, we are actually releasing ourselves to be able to move on and focus on what is best and beautiful about our lives, which is clearly not that incident. I love the story of Joseph coupled with this. I think this is one of the most beautiful liturgical pairings, because the story of Joseph is precisely this story played out, right? For those of you who aren't familiar, the story of Joseph starts out in this, I think it's the funniest place ever, because Joseph is like this young anti-Martin Luther King Jr. He has a dream. And he tells his brother this dream. If you haven't read this, you've got to go back and read the story. Joseph tells his brother, he literally comes to his brothers with an I have a dream speech. And Joseph's dream, he shares two of them. I have a dream, brothers. The first one was that I was the moon and you were the stars and you were all bowing down to worship me. And the second dream was that we were all sheaves of wheat and I was a tall sheaf and all of your sheaves of wheat bowed down and worshiped me. I have a dream. You guys have siblings? Picture their face right now and imagine that they came to you and said, I have a dream that you would bow down and worship me. Sure. You're insane. If anybody knows that you're not divine, it's your siblings. Clearly. I can't believe Joseph, what kind of a jerk, can even think this is a great thing to share with his brothers, right? I mean, you know exactly who that person is. The person who's like, hey guys, worship me. Who does this kid think he is? I mean, he's younger than all of them but one. Like, little brother comes in and tells everybody else they need to bow down and worship him. Right. Like, that's the start of the story. Joseph is awful. Joseph is delusional, horrible. He thinks it's about getting everybody else to serve him. And so his brothers do something awful in response. They throw him in a pit, sell him into slavery, take his clothes, make him look like he was killed by a wild animal, and send him back to his father. He was the favorite, so that makes it even worse, right? Like, daddy's favorite telling everybody else he's better than them. And so they do this awful thing to him, and the human response of some, well, and of course the story is just this amazing story where Joseph gets sold into slavery, into Egypt. He ends up in the house of a magistrate where it goes very well. He does good work. Ends up that the guy's wife makes a pass at him. Joseph won't go for it. He gets thrown in jail, framed for stuff, thrown in jail. Again, looks like a horrible twit turn. But in jail, he ends up making friends with the Pharaoh's cupbearer and food taster, and ends up in turn explaining Pharaoh's dream to Pharaoh and becoming the number two person in the entire empire of Egypt, which is the most powerful empire on earth at the time. So he goes from this horrible, awful, worst event that could possibly happen, being betrayed by your brothers, sold into slavery, ending up in jail, probably going to get killed, to being the second most powerful person in the world. And then his brothers show up, which is where we find this story, right? Last time he's seen them, what happened? They sold him into slavery. Yay. Revenge. Payback. The shoe is finally on the other foot, and it's going to drop hard. Right? I mean, but that's not what happens, of course. And Joseph's speech to them is just profound, because Joseph says, what you intended for harm, God repurposed for good. That God was at work in these circumstances, doing something bigger than you and I could have envisioned at the time. That God took these horrible events and redeemed them and turned them into an opportunity. Of course, Pharaoh's dream that Joseph interpreted was that there were going to be 7 years of famine and followed by, or 7 years of abundance followed by 7 years of famine. And so Joseph recommends that they build storehouses and save up the grain in the wonderful years so that there's enough for everyone in the lean years. And it's what happens. And Joseph said God was at work in these horrible, awful circumstances and was bringing something amazingly good out of it, that he would provide salvation. He said God was at work saving everyone. What if we viewed these injuries that we take, these hits, these attacks, as opportunities where God might be at work trying to bring salvation to everyone? What if those were precisely the times that God was taking and seeking to redeem and use our lives to bring about a change? And if there's anybody whose love you'd trust, it's the love of an enemy, right? Because they're not going to, I mean, if they do something nice for you, they have no reason to. Joseph forgives his brothers. And of course, Joseph gets far more out of this than he sacrifices, right? A restoration of relationship. He gets connection, communion. He gets to see his father again. He provides for all of them. God turned this awful betrayal into the most beautiful reunion and salvation. Familiar story? What Jesus has done for us would turn a betrayal by human beings into the offer of salvation, freely giving himself for everyone, taking the worst act that humans have ever done and turning that into an opportunity for reunion with God. I believe this is what we are all invited into. To be merciful as our Father is merciful. To be gracious as our Father is gracious. To be a blessing to all as our Father is a blessing to all. To be generous as our Father is generous. To be forgiving as our Father is forgiving. I found the coolest story of this. Mary, maybe you've seen it. Her name was Mary Johnson. She's from Minneapolis. About 20 years ago, when her son Loramian was 16, he was killed at a party by a 17-year-old kid. And as any of you parents can understand, she was, of course, crushed, furious, that somebody could snuff out the life of your child. The murderer's name was O'Shea, and she hated O'Shea. She wished it would have been him that died instead of her son. O'Shea was convicted, sent to prison, and Mary was carrying around this incredible injury, this incredible hurt, this loss and grief over having her son murdered at a party. And she was a Christian, she was a Sunday school teacher, so she joined a support group. And they started talking about how important it was to actually initiate a relationship with the person who caused you the harm. And so she tried. She reached out to the prison where he was, and he refused to see her. But she kept trying. And a few years later, he finally agreed. And so she went to visit him, and she, by that point, had started growing a little bit and went in and said, "O'Shea, my name's Mary Johnson. You killed my son. But I'd like to wipe the slate clean and try to start a new relationship with you." And he did. And they started talking. And she started visiting him once a month. During the time he was in prison, he lost his mother. She died. But Mary kept visiting him. And at some point in there, she talks, she's fascinating to listen to talk about what forgiving means. And it is not this point in time thing. Of course, it is this process that might require choosing to forgive over and over and over and over, because you're not going to stop missing your son, right? And so she continued to choose to forgive him, and she continued to show up and meet with him and pray with him, and they'd talk together. And he got released a few years early, and do you know what Mary Johnson did? She adopted him. She invited him to move in next door to her. She cooks him breakfast most days. She lost a son when O'Shea killed Loramian. But through forgiveness, she gained a son. and he gained a mother. There is nothing that's going to bring her son back. That is a horrible loss. But you know what makes the world better? When a son who's lost a mother and a mother who's lost a son can start doing life together. And that's what they've done. I think Jesus' reward that he is promising us in this text is not just in the life to come. And I believe that this matters much in the life to come, that to the extent we can love and forgive and be generous, that this matters a lot in eternity. But I think this matters now. I think we live our best lives, that we form our best futures by being willing to forgive, being willing to be generous with our goodness, being wide and open with our forgiveness, and being willing to love every single human being God brings to our paths. It's my prayer for myself and for you. Amen. Stand with me as we sing, "They Will Know We Are Christians by Our Love."